Good morning. It's Saturday, October 11th, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM-LP, in Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, your host for Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear a conversation with Kathy Giorgio. Kathy is the director and founder of All Writers Workplace and Workshop, a creative writing studio based in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Her numerous writing credits include Stories in Fiction International, Dos Passos Review, Bayou, Eclipse, Potomac Review, Bellowing Arc, and the premier issues of Slab and Broken Bridge Review. She's also the editor, owner, and publisher of Quality Fiction Magazine, which is formerly Quality Women's Fiction. When I spoke to Kathy in September, I first asked how All Writers came to be.
Well, it came to be because I was already teaching. I've actually been teaching for 13 years through community colleges, through Writer's Digest online, and through a number of other online schools. And it got to the point where I was teaching about 65 hours a week. And my students wanted me to have a special place where they could come, where it could be more of a community, and so I decided to open All Writers. It needed to be a community of writers. It needed to be a place where when students came, they knew they were working with a teacher that was right there with them, was currently publishing, was currently writing, and was doing everything that they wanted to do. When I was teaching in community education, I was finding a lot of students who came to me saying that they had taken a previous fiction class that was taught by a poet, or they were taking a poetry class that was taught by a memoirist, or in one really incredible one, they were taking a creative writing class that was taught by a person who liked to read a lot. That's their whole credential. Yeah. And to me, it's very, very important that if you want to learn to write, you work with someone who is currently writing.
Right.
And so I decided to set the school up, and my standards for my faculty were that they had to be currently writing in their genre, and they had to be currently publishing, so that they know everything that's going on in the literary marketplace right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and All Writers, too. I mean, I went to Vermont College for my graduate degree, probably with a little different agenda than most people. I think a lot of people go to Vermont College to improve their writing. And by the time I got there, I was already up in publishing. I was always, you know, very comfortable with where I was in my writing. I went primarily for the teaching credibility. And my original thought was that I wanted to teach in academia because I turned 40 right when I got to college or to graduate school, and suddenly words like benefits,
yes,
and retirement plan became very important. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll get my teaching degree and I'll go teach for academia. And then I found out that most places, most schools will not take you unless you've had a book out. And I was kind of horrified by that. I had, you know, 10 years of teaching experience at the time. I've had short stories published nationally, internationally, all over the place. And I had students that I had managed to get through publishing books, through publishing stories. I wanted to be able to be a writer who could teach. And so then at that point it became, well, if I'm going to want to reach the number of people I want to reach, I've got to have my own school.
Now, when you say that you needed a book, do you mean to be on faculty somewhere?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a panel at the end of grad school, which was life after the MFA.
Yeah.
And one of the things they told us was that to get an interview, you had to have a book out. And to have a job, you were probably going to have two books out. And that just crushed me. I was just amazed by that. And so I went home, and my students said, forget that. Let's form our own place. And I already had students who were up in publishing who could become my faculty. And so we just went from there. And then All Writers was born in January of 2006.
Now you're in
Waukesha.
And how big of a city is that?
Waukesha is a good-sized city. We're not as big as Milwaukee, but we are a metropolitan area. We have 12 different elementary schools. We have 3 middle schools. We have 3 high schools. And we have, I think, 2 different universities, and we have several community colleges. So we're a good-sized place.
Okay. So you find that that population supports your on-site classrooms?
Yes, they do. We, of course, too, also have the online classes, which anybody can take from anywhere. And so we have students that, I have 2 students right now who are in Jerusalem. We have students from Russia. We have students from China and Japan and from all over Africa. And so it's very much an international school right now.
How are they hearing about you?
Mostly word of mouth. A lot of my students know other people who want to write, so I hear about them through there. And then also, since I teach for Writer's Digest, I get a lot of students that way, too, and I take them as far as I can get them through Writer's Digest, and then when they're ready for a more workshopping kind of class, they jump over to me. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, a lot of people just do a search on Google. They look for writing classes, and we tend to pop up pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And then I also get people just through, when I have short stories published, they see my name, they see that I teach, they check out the website, and then they're with me.
Mm-hmm. We've had a number of writing schools start up and then fade away here in the Burlington area. It's a smaller city than what you're talking about, but I'm just wondering, what makes it so hard to keep these businesses going, do you think? Do you find it a struggle?
Amazingly, no. And that's one thing I've been very pleased with. All Writers is going to be 4, and they usually say that a new business either dies within the first year or they die within the first 5 years. And we are doing very well. I became very nervous when people started using the R word, the recession word, mm-hmm. and I thought, well, you know, this could be a problem because I'm a luxury in most people's lives. But instead, we're seeing an increase in enrollment, and I think that's because people are looking for something to do that they can do at home. And the online classes are increasing because people don't want to spend money on gas, but they can still take classes via the Internet and get everything that they wanted. I think primarily the reason why other schools go under may again have to do with their faculty, with who they have teaching, mm-hmm. and with what their focus is. We focus very much on writers who take writing very seriously and who are looking for publication. And so the people that come here have very strong goals. Mm-hmm. So once they settle themselves down, they're here. I have students with me now that I have had for the entire 13 years that I've taught. They just keep hanging on. And I think you also have to provide a tier of classes. You have to start with the how-tos. You have to provide lectures. You have to provide assignments. But then there also has to be a place for the advanced writer to go, and that's what the workshops are, so that they have a place to come where they can still share their work, where they feel safe, where they're getting not just negative criticism, but they're also told what they're doing right.
Right.
And go from there. So when I envisioned All Writers, I very much envisioned a place that the beginner could be and that the advanced writer could be. And that's exactly what we have.
Which is why you named it that, I'm sure.
Yep.
How many faculty members do you have?
We are up to, including me, 9 teachers.
Okay. Now, you offer on-site and online classes, as you've said, and you also offer one-on-one coaching and a critique service. Which of these is the most popular with students?
I think probably the most popular would be the workshop in both on-site and online, because that is a chance to not only work with me or work with one of the other faculty, but it's a chance to meet other writers and, again, to have that community sense. Coaching is also very popular for people who are trying to figure out their way through the publishing world. Mm-hmm. Is what we do with coaching is, of course, we work one-on-one with them. They meet with their coach for an hour every week, either face-to-face if they're local, or via the telephone or an online chat room if they're from farther away. And they can hand in up to 20 double-spaced pages a week, which is a healthy hunk. And the coach is with them then through the whole process. The very first time we meet a client, we want to know what their goals are. Are they just looking to publish individual short stories? Are they looking to someday publish a collection? Are they looking to publish a novel? And so we keep an eye on the big picture as they're working on the little things. When they get through a manuscript, and we've been through it through several drafts, and the coach and the writer both feel that it's ready to start to be sent out, we help them with the business aspect, with writing the cover letter, with researching the markets, and with sending everything out. With a novel, we help them write their synopsis. We help them write the cover letter. We help them research agents. We help them decide, do they want to go with an agent? Do they want to try to go with the smaller independent publishers? And then we help them get it out there and start working their way, because the publishing world is amazingly confusing.
Yeah.
So it's like holding their hand all the way through and giving them a path so that they know that what they're doing is the correct way to do it.
Now, do you charge hourly for coaching, or is there a package price?
Coaching is a monthly fee, and so you get 4 weeks, and it's an hour, of course, every week, and handing in 20 pages, and it is $300 a month.
Now, how many students do you have as a coach?
As a coach right now, I have 10 clients.
10 clients. So you're reading 200 pages a week.
You got it.
That's a lot.
And I actually, if you count all of the people I'm currently working with in classes, online, on-site, and with coaching, I usually have a student load of about 200 at any given time.
Do you sleep?
So it's huge. And I'm still working 65 hours a week, even though I started my own business. The 65 hours a week hasn't changed. But I love it, which is what helps. I think if I was doing any other job, I'd probably be dead by now. But I love what I do. So,
what one or two pieces of advice do you find yourself most often offering to your clients?
Probably number one is not putting themselves under so much pressure. I think that writers tend to feel that if they are not sitting down every single day of the week and writing a certain number of pages, that they're not a writer. They have to realize that most writers don't write every day of the week. Most of us have lives going on, and we don't have time to always do it. And instead of criticizing themselves for the amount of time they're spending toward writing, they should instead be congratulating themselves over any time that they manage to eke out and get their writing done. A lot of the students I work with focus on page numbers. How much are they producing each week?
Mm-hmm.
And again, they need to focus more on the quality of their work. Are they managing to get out what they want to say? They don't have to worry about, I need to write 10 pages each week. And that's one of the pieces of advice that I see out there a lot, where writers will tell another writer, just try to write 3 pages a day, and after 1 year you've produced so many pages, don't even think about it. You know, just think about what you're writing and what you're working on. When I tell people with coaching that they are allowed to hand in 20 pages a week, I almost always will see their faces fall, because they immediately think, there's no way I can produce 20 pages in a week. And so I have to remind them that it's just a guideline. It's a way to make sure that someone's not handing me in 100 pages every week.
Right.
20 pages is the max. That doesn't mean if they only produce 2 or 3 pages a week that they are a failure. Writers are amazingly quick to get down on themselves,
mm-hmm.
and to start feeling like they aren't cut out for this life, they aren't cut out for this career. And so a lot of what I do is trying to get the writers to see what they are doing, what they are accomplishing, rather than focusing so much on what they're not.
Okay.
So I think that would probably be the number one thing that I talk to students about, is don't worry about how much you're producing. Be worrying more about the quality of what you're producing.
Great. Now, when do you write, Kathy?
I write in the afternoons. Afternoon has always been my writing time, and I keep it very sacred. The only time I break it is if I am totally overwhelmed with reading student manuscripts and I have to scramble, but that doesn't happen that often. I'm usually at my desk by 1 o'clock. I write until 3:30 when my daughter comes home from school, and then usually once I have her settled, she's 7, so I can get her off and doing something, I can still write until, you know, from 4 o'clock to about 6, and that's sacred.
Right.
It's my time.
Now, you also edit a literary journal called Quality Fiction?
Correct. Yes, I own it, I publish it, and I edit it. A magazine called Quality Women's Fiction was started in 1994 in England. I was in it several times. I got to know the editors very well, and they were having problems shipping magazines to the United States. Whenever they would send magazines over here, they would get lost, and it was costing them a bundle. And so they asked me if they could just ship me a box of the magazines, and I could become the United States distributor, which I became. Then they decided to step down. They didn't want to publish the magazine anymore, and so they asked me, do you want a magazine? And I thought, well, you know, I'm doing everything else. I did eventually want All Writers to have its own magazine, and this way I was able to get a magazine that was already up and running, that already had a reputation, that already had a subscribership, and so I took it over in 2006. And with the next issue in January that comes out, will be its first time published as Quality Fiction as opposed to Quality Women's Fiction. We're introducing men into the mix.
Okay.
And letting them write too.
And did you gain or lose subscribers because of that decision?
So far, we're holding steady. It's been interesting because the majority of the subscribers when I first took over the magazine were British. And as soon as it came out that I was taking it over, I was inundated with emails saying, you're not going to Americanize our magazine, are you? And I thought, well, I'm American, so yes, I probably will be. But I've made the changes very slowly. And so I'm sure we've probably lost a few, but so far there's been no negative response to it, and we've picked up on subscriptions a little bit now, too. We're getting men subscribing. So hopefully it won't hurt us overall.
Now, what do you think that means to Americanize the publication?
You know, when I was reading the magazine before I took it over, and even the few times I was in it, the stories sometimes were very generic. They were very, they wanted happy stories. They wanted stories that were light. They wanted stories that made them smile and made them laugh. And I'm fine with that. But I wanted a mix. I wanted a little bit of everything in this magazine. And I think that's what they were afraid of, that I would maybe introduce a few issues with the story. I would maybe bring in some darker topics. I would maybe bring in some more controversial subjects. And we have. But I don't want the magazine to have a tone. I want it to be a wide variety of stories. So what I've done is I've taken from my student base and I've set up a reading committee of both men and women now. It used to be all women. Now it's all both mixed men and women. All different ages. My youngest reader is in his early 20s. My oldest is just going into her 80s. And they all write different things. I have a romance writer on board. I have a science fiction writer. I have mainstream. I have literary. I have everything, so that we're getting a flavor to the magazine that is very mixed. We aren't seeing all literary. We aren't seeing all mainstream. It's a bunch of everything. So that hopefully anybody who picks up the magazine will find something that they like.
Yeah, I find that kind of ironic. Americans have a reputation for liking happy endings in our movies, certainly. Sometimes I think certain movies have even had endings changed for an American audience because we can't quite handle the confusing ending, is what you hear. Is that not what you're finding then?
No, that was not what I was finding at all, at least not in literature. And, you know, if you look at some of the books that have been out in recent years, House of Sand and Fog, you know, by Andre de Bess III, you find a book where at the end everybody is either dead or in jail. And there's a lot of books like that out there. We are accused at times in the literary genre of being the gloom and doom genre. And I think that's kind of what they were afraid of, that we were going to introduce a lot of dark things. Mm. So, I don't know. I'm seeing that changing some in our publishing history now, too. It's if you look back over time in publishing, anytime the country is at war, anytime we are at war, there's a switch in entertainment towards slapstick. Hmm. And towards happy, happy topics, and I think it's a way to bounce away from war. And so I think that's partly why we're seeing the rise, of course, in reality television. I've been seeing more and more calls for manuscripts from magazines that are asking for things in a lighter tone. And so I think that's kind of beginning to happen, which I hope it doesn't happen too much, because that would take away from what I write.
As an editor, what do you want to see, if anything, in a submission letter?
In a submission letter?
Right.
I want very little in a submission letter. About all I want is to know, first off, if you are making a simultaneous submission or if you are submitting the story just to my magazine, and I want to know if you have any credits. That's pretty much it. I get a lot of cover letters that try to tell me what the story is about. And I don't want that. I want the story to speak for itself. I don't want an introduction to the story in the letter. Every now and then, you get a letter that's really kind of goofy. I got a letter with the last submission. They made it sound almost like they were confessing something to me. I actually have a letter right here. The cover letter said, "Dear Kathy, thank God I have found someone to tell. I have been desperate to share my story. I could not send it to anyone but you. You are a woman like me, Kathy. Please, please read this and tell me you understand how this could happen. I am not a bad person. I cannot tell you more about me. I am sorry." Well, I returned the story unread. And I explained that, first off, it sounded like the submission was nonfiction, and we publish fiction. And the cover letter was just incredibly unprofessional. It sounded like a confessional booth.
Right.
She wrote me back, and she told me that the whole thing was fiction, including the cover letter. She wasn't writing an unprofessional cover letter, she said, but part of the story. And so she had put her character into the cover letter. I was just horrified. You know, that's about as unprofessional as you can get. I get cover letters with signatures that have smiley faces on them. I have cover letters that, you know, try to make a joke, and I, of course, have cover letters that try to butter me up. And I hate all of those. I just want to know, are you submitting it to me or to another magazine, and have you published before, and that's it.
Right. It almost sounds like performance art instead of fiction.
Right, and it's not like either that we lean toward people who have published before. When I send the stories off to my reading committee, they do not see the cover letter, so they have no idea what the writer's background is.
Hmm.
So, but I like to know, because I like to see who's submitting. I like to know where they're hearing about us and what are they thinking and what type of writer are we getting to submit.
Okay. And what are some of your favorite literary magazines?
Besides my own, I love Fiction International.
Uh-huh.
It's a great little magazine. It tends to have themes to it. And I like the idea of themes. I like throwing something out there and seeing what a number of writers can do with it. I think it's fascinating that you can throw something out like the word, one of the magazines or Fiction International's I was in, the theme was fetish. And that was it. That's all you got, was the word fetish. And then to see what people came up with around that, mm-hmm. I think is just incredible. It's creative, and it's wonderful to see how the mind works. SEMA is another one of my favorite magazines for the same reason. They always have a theme, which they just toss out, and the writer is allowed to react to it. I like Tin House. I think they're very, very cutting edge. They're usually willing to look at something a little bit more experimental. Hunger Mountain, I think, is a very, very ambitious magazine, and I think they're doing a beautiful job there. And Glimmer Train is an old, old favorite of mine. I've loved them for years.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had a lot of success with your writing, having published in, for example, Fiction International, which you just mentioned, and Dos Passos mm-hmm. Review, Eclipse, Potomac Review, others. I'm curious, how has your role as an editor affected your success as a writer?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that it's really affected my success as a writer. It's kind of broadened my view a little bit, being on the other side of the desk now, being on the editor's side. For example, I was just talking with someone yesterday about the magazine and talking about the number of submissions we're getting, and I heard myself saying, and if just each of them would subscribe, wouldn't that be wonderful? Where a year ago I would have said, why do all these magazines want all the writers to subscribe? How can we possibly afford all these subscriptions? And so my mind is a little bit more open to that now, yeah. And realizing what editors go through. I think it's also opened my mind up a little bit more in terms of accepting rejection. You find as an editor that reading stories sometimes too really depends on how your own day is going. Mm-hmm. There are days I will not read anything that was submitted because I know that anything I read I would hate because I'm hating the world on that day. And there are other days that I would probably accept anything if I'm in an exceptionally good mood. So I think it has affected how I look at editors and realize that they are very human people. So I think, you know, that's in there. In terms of being a success as a writer, I really don't think my acceptances have changed all that much just because, of course, I put in my cover letters that I'm the editor of the magazine. I don't think it really affects it too much. I don't know that editors look at me any differently than what they did before.
Mm-hmm. My last question for you is sort of applies to you as a writer and a teacher and a coach. I'm curious, what advice do you have for other writers who occasionally find themselves stuck in their work? What might you suggest to help them move forward?
I have a number of things that I do with writers if they are finding themselves stuck. The first thing I remind them of is that in any job out there in the field, we now have something that is called a personal day. We don't always have to take sick leave. We don't always have to go on vacation. Sometimes we take personal days from our work, and the same is true for writers. If there is a day that you just simply do not want to face that computer or the blank page, take a personal day and give yourself a break. If you find yourself doing that 10 or 11 days in a row, there might be a problem. But there's nothing wrong with taking a day off. Then the other thing I have them do, particularly if they're working on a book, books are a major commitment in your life. If you're going to write a novel or if you're going to write a book-length memoir, from what I've seen, most books take at least 2 years to write. Some of them take even longer. And you often find yourself midway through a book just absolutely hating your characters and not wanting to look at them anymore. One of the things I recommend you do is stop the book for a while and go and write a short story. If you wanted to, you could base it on the book. You could write a short story based on a secondary character, someone you haven't focused on as much in the book. Or you could write a short story with the same people that are in the book but start it 10 years earlier or start it 10 years later, just to give your mind a whole different focus. And sometimes that's all that's needed. Once you're done with that story, then you go back to the book and you're excited about it again. Another thing you can do with a book, and this is one I don't like to push too much because I really like to see people who are writing books pushing their way through a draft before they go back to rewrite. But if they're really, really stuck, go back to chapter one and start to edit. And often when you go back to chapter one, you recapture the excitement you felt when you were first starting the book. And that will help you get through it too.
Okay.
So that's just some things you can do to help you if you're stuck and help you move your way through.
Great. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're very welcome.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kathy Giorgio. And now, please mark your calendars. As of next Saturday, October 18th, Write the Book will be changing to an hour-long format. This means longer, more in-depth interviews, as well as a new feature, the weekly Write the Book prompt, a writing exercise designed to get you going or help you out of your rut. Beginning next Saturday, please tune in at our new time, 9 a.m. You'll hear an interview with the poet Robin Bain. Write the Book is brought to you in part by Autism Support Daily, Vermont's first online support group. Today is the annual Vermont Autism Walk. It begins at Battery Park and heads downtown. For more information, visit autismsupportdaily.com or call 985-8773. You can also head down to Battery Park at noon today registration is free for that event. Also, please remember to come to the Radiator's birthday party tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. We are at 215 College Street on the third floor in downtown Burlington. If you're interested in sharing Write the Book with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live every Saturday morning. And starting next week, that will be at 9 a.m. at www.theradiator.org. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes as free podcasts. If you have comments about the show or events for next week's Bookworms calendar, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. Stay tuned. Hike Bedrosian is up next. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, in Burlington, Vermont.